favorite wing. I always say the next one.
Float like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious. That ball was on the line.
Hello and welcome to NFL Only Better, where we will take a look ahead to this weekend's action on the gridiron, as well as casting a glance back to everything from the last weekend. My name is John Balfe. I'll be replacing Kieran O'Connor in the hot seat here for one night only. Joining me here in the studio is Betfair's Joe Lee. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
Not too bad. He'll be providing us with some of the betting analysis and tips for this weekend's fixtures as we approach the business end of the season. And of course, on the line from the English capital is Mike Carlson. Mike, how are you?
I'm good. You know, I miss what's his name? The guy who hosts it normally.
Kevin, I think.
Kevin, yeah. That's he's one. Really good, you know. I really miss him.
He has his moments, I suppose. He has his moments. But we'll get this a bit more professional here today.
Got some tough shoes to fill, so.
Yeah, exactly. So Mike, this is the first show we've done since our there's the dog in the background. Did you say Jet?
So week of the underdog already, I would suggest.
That's it. Exactly. With the first show we've done, so did you enjoy our video episode last week, Mike?
Oh yeah. I mean, it is the way to go, because I think people can see the light in your eyes when you're actually making a bet you don't believe in.
Yeah, or the look of sheer panic on our faces as well. Sometimes it tells a story.
A lot more context added.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll be getting you on the flight over here next, Mike. Kieran and I have done our part. It's your turn to contribute to the podcast.
That works for me.
Okay, cool. So we'll start off with the first section as per usual, and it's what we got right or what we got wrong at the weekend. I guess since I'm currently talking, I'll start with my one. I had my focus on the Atlanta-New Orleans game. I went for the over, which was 49.5, and it ended up being 44. It was obviously a close game, but I didn't come out on top despite picking the winner. Mike, how did you find that game?
I'm not convinced by the Saints. I thought that was a game like you. I thought that was a game that they should win comfortably. And to me, it's not quite the same as last year when everybody was saying the last month of the season, it looked like Drew Brees' arm was tired. Ever since he's come back, I haven't thought that he's had zip on the ball. And he still puts it where it needs to be more or less, but it doesn't get there as quickly. And I don't think the Saints are as dominating a team offensively as they were when Teddy Bridgewater was there. So it didn't do anything to convince me that the Saints are going to live up to my Super Bowl prediction, but you know, they do have the advantage of playing in a division where they shouldn't have any trouble with any of the teams in their division at this point.
10-2 record, tough man to convince there.
Absolutely. But I mean, that's sort of the thing. When you get, it's sort of a narrative about these aging quarterbacks like Breeze's. I believe he's 40 years old. And if you start to see him coming back from his thumb injury, and like Mike said, losing a bit of pop in his arm, is he, you know, when you're 40 years old, is that the sort of thing that's going to get better or worse over time? Do you know? I mean, I think that's something to look forward to. And if you see, this is twice now in the space of 3 or 4 weeks where the Saints haven't, well, the first time they played the Falcons, they didn't look great at all, and they lost that game, and they weren't overly convincing in this one as well.
I guess you got a scenario there where Breeze is probably back quicker than any of us anticipated as well. So I guess you've got luck on your side, so to speak, if you are on the Saints for the Super Bowl, that you're getting bonus Breeze action here, given he has been injured and is already back.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and now you know they've got... You know, they're finished with their division except for the last week when they're at Carolina. But they've got the 49ers this week and then Indianapolis and Tennessee. So none of those are easy games, particularly. And the 49er one, obviously, is huge this week. It's maybe the game of the week.
Yeah. Do you think, Mike, let's see how you feel about this one. Do you think Bridgewater takes any more snaps this or any more significant snaps this season?
Not unless Breeze actually gets hurt, I think. I don't think Sean Payton goes away from Breeze, because I think he and Payton are just so simply on the same page that he does, you know, he runs the offense the way Payton wants it to be run.
Yeah.
You'll probably see more snaps from Taysom Hill at quarterback than Teddy.
at this stage, you don't want to throw out the balance again, given that you've already had Breeze out and now he's back. There's no point in playing around with something. If it's not broken, don't fix it.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. And just looking, casting our glance back to some of the other games, Mike, I think you picked Chicago over Detroit, which I believe you were correct. And
and on the bet column, which comes up on Fridays, gives me the benefit of an extra day to
figure out what you got wrong on the podcast.
I mean, I was actually pretty good because I had Tennessee on the money line over Indy, which they did. Green Bay over the Giants, Houston over the Patriots, getting points. But my best bet was Baltimore -5.5, and obviously they only won by 3. And on that last drive, I was sitting there, you know, just waiting for Lamar Jackson to break a big run and put him down by the end zone and cover the spread. But that didn't happen. And the weird thing was, I do, as you know, a straight up football column on Patreon every Friday. And I picked Houston straight up on the Patriots and woke up Saturday morning and changed it. And I've only done that once before, and I was correct that time. But now I'm just thinking, you know, first thought, best thought. Don't overthink it. Leave it to go. And I would have been better, obviously, on my weekly picks. Yeah. And just gone with what I put up on Betfair, because I just thought this was a good opportunity for the Patriots to lose.
That actually takes us nicely to our next section. I was going to talk about the Patriots game. I suppose we'll start our bad beats section with this. This is one of Kieran's favorite parts of the show, so shout out to K-Dog. The Patriots spread was 47, and it ended up being 48 because of the two late touchdowns. Joe, you saw that game. What did you make of the Patriots' performance there?
Yeah, they're probably flattered by the end result, really. Saw a great story out from the game, which is what resulted in the line movement, the total movement. Obviously, there was flu issues in Foxborough this week. I think they chartered two planes to Houston, so one for people who were players recovering or had recovered, had the flu, and then one for the players who'd been absolutely fine. So segregation within the team was never going to be a good indicator for the week itself. Yeah, look, from my humble opinion, Houston dominated the game. Brady's looking slow. Ironically enough, the Patriots are scoring more points on the defensive side of the football than near the offensive side of the football now. But yeah, Houston made Brady and Co. look fairly common standard, which is an interesting statement to make.
It is, Mike.
Yeah, I looked at it slightly different, and I agree. Houston did more or less dominate the game, but I don't see the problem being with Brady as much as being with his receiving core. That was a game that they could have won. They go down on the first drive and they've got third and goal on the 5 or 6. And Philip Dorsett is running across at the back line of the end zone and he stops. Brady throws it. If you're watching, you know, he runs from right to left. There's a linebacker dropping into the zone in front of him, and he stops as the linebacker breaks his vision, and Brady throws the ball to the other side of the linebacker, expecting Dorsett is just going to run the rest of his pattern and catch the ball, and he doesn't. And that, to me, marked the thing. There was a play where Brady threw, and I was discussing it with a friend at the time, and Brady throws to Dorsett, and there's nobody there. Dorsett runs up the middle of the field, and Brady's throwing for him to run a flag pattern. And I said, oh, Dorsett misread the coverage. And it turns out there was a great analysis by Dan Orlovsky on video. And he spotted that Brady had given Dorsett a hand signal for a double move in order to get him outside on that play. And Dorsett either didn't see it or just ignored it. And Brady went to the sidelines shaking his head. And if you're a lip reader, he was saying, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And you know, when he loses faith in a receiver, that's it. He just stops throwing to them. It's bizarre. So if they had connected on a kick at the end of the game, that would have been a great finish. And they didn't miss by much. You know, it went off, I think it was Hightower's hand and out of bounds, but it was there. And I'm thinking, what a good 40 seconds this is going to be. But I kind of agree that they're not, this team reminds me of a team that that lost in the playoffs when Rashay Caldwell dropped the pass about, I don't know what it was, not years ago. They just don't have the receivers. Their line looks a little bit better since Isaiah Wynn came back. They protected him pretty well against the Texans. They ran the ball a little bit in the first half, which they haven't been able to do. So, you know, I look at it, I think they'll think, if we hadn't made the mistakes, we could have won that game. The problem for them is that Houston's not an elite team. You know, they're a decent team. They're a good team. They held Deshaun Watson in check pretty much, apart from a couple of big plays. They held DeAndre Hopkins in check. So I think their problem is, if they don't make the mistakes, they can beat a Houston, but can they beat a Baltimore or San Francisco? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. It's all speculation, but do you suggest that the half the roster being ill had anything to do with the performance? Or the...
Well, that's what affected me on making the pick.
Yeah.
When I read the thing, I actually had the opposite reaction. I said, okay, they're just making a big deal of it, and they're going to be fine when they come out. And I don't think it did, to be honest. I think the problems you see with them are more endemic than just a case of, or 17 cases of the flu.
But ultimately, if I've learned anything from watching the NFL for many years, you discount Brady and Belichick at your peril. So they'll probably turn it around and go on and win the Super Bowl.
They'll almost certainly win the Super Bowl. Almost certainly. It just this is how the NFL works. just a couple more quick games from last weekend. Michael, throw this to you. Browns surrendered the 10-point lead to the Steelers and then to, only to lose by a touchdown. What did you make of that game?
Oh, the mighty Duck.
He did his thing, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, there was an interesting quote from Joe Hayden after the game. He said, you know, the Duck throws receivers open. And I'm not sure if that's the case, but that's what the really good quarterbacks do. You know, lots of quarterbacks can hit an open receiver, can put the ball in. But the really great ones are the ones who can see where the receiver is going to be open and put the ball there so the receiver can run into it, run onto it.
Yeah, and James Washington Washington played very well with Duck there, I thought.
Exactly. I was just you beat me to the punch there because that's exactly what passes to James Washington. You really did see that. And I don't know. I mean, Cleveland's imploding, basically. But here you have a team with a ton of talent that can't put it together. And you got the Steelers who are, you know, they're kind of like the Patriots. They're doing it with seeds and stems. And the only part of the team that's really intact in top flight are their two lines, or front sevens, you know, they're on offense and defense, which reminds me, you know, that's the strength of football. Yeah. And if you have a really good offensive line, it makes everything better, and it allows you to win games with Duck at quarterback and Jalen Samuels or Benny Snell running the ball. You know, just make them look a bit better. But you got to give Mike Tomlin a little credit too for simply saying, "Look, Mason Rudolph's not working out. Let's take this third string by him and play him."
Yeah, it paid off.
Not many coaches would do that.
Yeah, it paid off. The last game that we'll touch on from last weekend, very quickly as well, but was the Dolphins Eagles game, and I assume both of you gentlemen saw the trick play there towards the end of the first half.
Who didn't see the trick play? I had people who have no interest.
The Eagles defense didn't see the trick play. That's
true. But I had people with no interest in the NFL tweeting me, sending me messages, going, "Hey, have you seen this?" So fair use to the Dolphins for engaging a cohort of people that have never paid any attention to the NFL whatsoever.
For the people who don't know who are listening to this, don't know exactly what we're talking about. There was a trick play that the Dolphins ran towards the end of the first half, in which they split the formation kind of at both sides of the field. And then took the snap to the punter, who then threw what essentially looked like a no-look shovel pass to the kicker for a touchdown.
Yeah,
then
shovel pass, spade pass, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, so apparently the statisticians we have here in Betfair Towers are telling us that that's the first time that a punter has ever thrown an a touchdown to a kicker in NFL history. If anybody can prove us wrong on that one, please feel free to contact the show. But Mike, where do you think that stands among all of the pantheon of NFL trick plays?
You know, it in formation, it kind of was like that one the Colts tried and failed against the Patriots.
Yes, which hilariously failed.
Yeah, but the difference is they sent out the field goal team. Mm-hmm. So that means the other team's got their field goal defense there. And obviously the Eagles, they of the Philly special that won them the Super Bowl, weren't actually prepared you know, for this to go. And it's designed so that the way you would defend it, they defended it pretty much the way you should, except nobody went with the kicker.
Yes, exactly.
Because, you know, you basically had five guys on one side of the field, five guys on the other side of the field, and a snapper and the punter, who was the holder. Mm-hmm. And he just took off, and he was about to get caught when he threw that shovel pass. And the kicker was coming from the five on the left across the field to the right. Nobody went with him, which, oh, yeah, he's just a kicker. But as Nick Foles proved, you know, anybody can catch a football.
The biggest irony I take from the whole thing is that the Eagles are actually still in with a shot off the playoffs, having gotten caught out that badly by that kind of play. So 13-8 right now to make the playoffs on the Betfair Sportsbook. So still in with a live shout. The Dallas Cowboys, Philadelphia Eagles, it's after you, no, after you in the NFC East, as usual.
Exactly, yeah, they're both being very kind to each other.
That's going to ignite a huge controversy when let's say, 12-4 team from the NFC West travels to either Philadelphia or Dallas.
As long as they get an opportunity to boot Santa Claus, they don't care down in Philadelphia.
that is all that matters. Actually, that's I suppose we had this. Kieran likes to call this section of the show his hot takes section. So we've already kind of talked about the we have covered the trick play, which I liked, and we have also covered the Patriots being perhaps a little too reliant on their defense as strong as it is. But Joe, you brought us into our next section there. We can kind of run these two things together. Who, if any team, is not performing this year that could potentially make a big run next year? Kind of how the San Francisco 49ers were last year in comparison to this year. Who do you think, guys, that might be?
Yeah, look, that's a really tough one. There's a few teams.
Cleveland Browns, right?
Yeah, overpromise and underdeliver is always the way to go there. I've got this weird, strange love affair with the Detroit Lions, but like, yeah, it's anybody's guess if they can. They're always there, thereabouts, and they seem to lose a lot of games by a very small margin. Seem to be perennially unlucky year in, year out.
And
if they'd fallen the right way, all of a sudden they're bang in the playoff contention, and they're all guns blazing.
Yeah, Well, as you know, we were some people on this podcast were quite high on Matthew Stafford's MVP candidacy. Kieran and Mike, I believe, as well. You were quite into.
No, you were
on the other side of that coin.
Has that been working out?
It was Kieran. I'm one of our regular listeners.
Oh, throw Kieran under the bus when he's not here.
Yeah, exactly. One of our regular listeners was actually contacting the show quite frequently to talk about Matthew Stafford's MVP candidacy. Obviously, it's not going to happen because he's been injured, and I don't think he's going to play again this season.
Detroit Lions 13.5 underdogs to Minnesota Vikings this weekend on the Betfair Sportsbook. So that'll tell you
13.5.
That'll tell you where they're at.
Yeah, that's probably an interesting number. I guess we'll get to that section of the show. But Mike, who do you think could potentially? This is all speculation. It's all theory. But who do you think might be able to make a run next year based upon the foundation that they might have laid this year?
Oh, next year's always so far.
Yeah.
Because, you know, who's gonna play quarterback for Denver, for example?
Yeah.
Who's going to play quarterback for the Chargers? We might find out during this year. Oakland is a team that's probably laid a foundation, you know, and they're not as good as we thought they might be at the point where they'd won a couple of games. But they're not that bad either. They just can't play from behind, which means, you know, they need to address that big play thing, which I think means they're probably going to look at another quarterback. I don't think that Derek Carr is really his quarterback of the future. I think the Rams could bounce back. In fact, if you're talking about a not so good team that could make the playoffs with a late run, you know, the Rams and the Steelers would be the kind of two teams I'd look at this year. Although in the AFC, you know, Tennessee is going to probably be, I think Tennessee, Houston is where it goes down to the wire for the South, and the other team might be the second wild card team.
Yeah.
With the NFL, everybody has a shot, and who knows, 3-9, currently 3-9 Miami Dolphins might trick play their way into the playoffs next season.
Every single play.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love the way that the herd works, the word from the herd, you know, the mouth clowns on, you know, because at the beginning of the season it was Miami's tanking the season.
Yeah.
Miami tanking the season. They lose for two or whatever the thing was, tank for two.
Yeah.
You don't work. It doesn't work like that. the league doesn't work like that. You know, once you come down to game time, you can't go out there intending to lose. It's impossible.
Absolutely.
Guys get hurt. You know, guys, and this is what you're seeing. And a decent coach, which is, I think, what Brian Flores is showing he's got the potential to be, keeps a team in games when they don't have much talent. And then you have to think, well, if they can improve their talent, they could be a threat. You know, I think they've got a huge question as to what they do in terms of quarterbacks. Because Fitz isn't your long-term answer, that's for sure. Rosen is not looking like he's any answer, you know?
That's what I was going to say. A lot of people were, you know, Josh Rosen was one of the big four, the big five quarterbacks in last year's draft, and he seems to be the one that's sort of floundered the most, sitting there back up to Fitzpatrick.
I've seen guys, you know, who've claimed to be experts on quarterbacks saying Rosen can't throw the ball. He can throw the ball. He just can't throw the ball when there's guys in his face. You know, to me, he's like a more skittish version of Jared Goff.
Yeah.
And it's like he is what Jared Goff would be if Jeff Fisher had continued coaching the Rams.
Right.
I remember that picture of Goff and Nick Foles embracing, you know, and the caption on it was, "Oh, don't worry, Jeff Fisher can't hurt us anymore." But I'd like to see what Goff could do behind a decent offensive line on a good team. He's had two years with bad teams, you know. But I think at his upside, his ceiling is kind of like what Goff's is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you handle him right and the conditions around him are good, he can be an effective quarterback, but not more. You know, he's in the same boat. I'd put Kyle Bowler from the past in that boat, you know, and quarterbacks don't make games on their own, most of them at least.
Yeah.
Rams are still 5-2 with Betfair to make the playoffs. What do you think of that, Mike?
Well, they've got a shot. I mean, if they can run the table, which is not an easy task because their schedule is not that easy. They finish 11-5, and 11-5 usually should get you into the playoffs.
Yeah, a couple of other teams you mentioned there. The Pittsburgh Steelers 11-10 to make the playoffs, and the Oakland Raiders 11-2. So still not discounted. We're looking ahead to next year, and they might still actually have a viable shot this year.
Well, to the Steelers, as much as regular listeners will know, and I've already mentioned it today, but I'm a Browns fan. As much as it pains me to say, I think the Steelers could be able to at least get a wild card. Well, I mean, they're not going to catch the Ravens now.
I think it's between them and either Tennessee or Houston, and I haven't sat and looked at the breakdown of, you know, what the tiebreaker is or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think, the way it boils down. The Bills are going to be one wild card. I think that's pretty much for sure.
Brown's still mathematically in it, but double-digit odds.
That's my favorite term, mathematically in it. It's mathematically possible, guys. You heard it here. I guess that'll cover that portion of the show. Two more quick topics before we move on to looking at the next week's games. Ron Rivera is gone from Carolina. Mike, what's happening there? Is David Tepper cleaning house?
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's cleaning house, but he's making changes. Yeah. And that was to be expected. I wasn't shocked by the move now because hedge fund guys tend to make up their mind and then act on it.
Sure.
Which seems to be his modus operandi. The big question to me that they have to sort out is Cam Newton and his future. Is he going to be able to come back healthy? Does he want to be the quarterback? Do you want him at quarterback? I don't think there's any question that if he's back at full Cam, he's a better option than Kyle Allen, who, again, the hype went crazy when Allen had a few good games, but he is basically a game managing type quarterback. I think his future is as a good backup who you can put in for a few games, but teams catch up to what he can and can't do pretty quickly. And whereas Cam is a guy who can win games for you. And then he's going to have to decide what he does with Marty Hurley in the front office, but that will probably depend a lot on what Cam does and then what they decide to do coaching wise. But the interesting thing to me is they kicked Norv Turner upstairs, the offensive coordinator, who might have, you know, in some people's minds might have been a candidate to replace Ron Rivera, but I don't think that's what the move was about. I just can't see Norv taking over as the head coach there.
I think given it is a betting podcast, we should refer to him as Riverboat Ron, or as the case is this week, Riverboat Gone, unfortunately.
That's why we pay you, Joe. That's why we pay you.
That's why I'm here, yes.
I wonder, do we have any, I'm not sure if we have this yet because it's only just happened, but if we have any numbers on who the potential replacement in Carolina might be. The early stuff I've seen, this is just speculation online and whatnot, but you know, Mike McCarthy's looking for a job. I don't know if he'd be a good fit for what they're trying to do there in Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it depends a lot on Cam Newton. Would I trust Mike McCarthy to run a Cam Newton offense? I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Greg Roman's a name that comes up a lot, the offensive coordinator with the Ravens. But, you know, Roman's whole history is a couple of good years with Kaepernick in San Francisco and now a great season with Lamar Jackson. Now, Cam would fit that profile if you want to run that kind of offense. But given his injury history, and, you know, this is the reason why more NFL teams don't run first offense with their quarterbacks.
Yes.
You know, could you run that offense? You know, if you're going to pay Cam to play, you don't want him getting hurt partway through the season. And then a lot of usual names will come up, including some college coaches who I don't think will leave the situations they have in college. But
Lincoln Riley and people like that, is that who you mean?
Yeah. It's always the first one. There's a couple of guys at lesser programs who you might, like Matt Rhule at Baylor, who was in contention for the Giants job a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Peterson at Washington is not coming back to Washington, which may be because he's been offered another college job. It may be that he's thinking of the NFL because there's going to be seven or eight openings. The name that I'm intrigued by, and nobody else is mentioning it, so I might be just blowing smoke, you know, about this, but I think Jim Harbaugh would be available.
Interesting.
Because I think Michigan would probably not require him to be bought out of the contract with as much money as it at the moment, because I think they would like to move on from him. He hasn't quite been as successful at Michigan as they would have hoped, which means you have to beat Ohio State, basically.
Yeah, which is easier said than done, as we all know. How long has Harbaugh been at Michigan now? Is it 3 or 4 years or something?
What is it now? 4 years, I think?
I think that tends to be his stay or his welcome. He kind of outlives his welcome after a certain period. So
just the attitude or something he's got.
Yeah, perhaps.
Intense character to deal with.
Yeah. Something like Kieran O'Connor sometimes, you know. So, the last topic for today. He's a very intense man, Mike, as you know. Very
Kieran
intense.
Kieran Harbaugh. Yeah, I like that.
A final question before we move on to this weekend's fixtures. And I believe, Mike, this is something that you've something to say about. I was curious about the concept or the topic of recency bias. And I say that because you look through NFL media or the blogs, the sports blogs and the websites, the topic this year, I believe, essentially seems to be how will anybody stop Lamar Jackson, and that was the same topic that people were talking about Pat Mahomes last year. The year before that, it was how do you stop Sean McVay team. Before that, you can go back to Matt Ryan or the Kyle Shanahan offense, or even Cam Newton. This list goes on and on in perpetuity, it seems. So how much stock do you put in things like that, Mike? Is this just a thing that happens annually in the NFL, or
I think you're talking about two different things there, two related things, you know, and one is everybody jumps on a bandwagon, and in the NFL, most of those bandwagons tend to get derailed I don't know what the word would be, because the NFL catches up with everything.
It does.
Everybody copies and somebody comes along with a scheme that will work against a specific offense or a specific defense.
Usually Bill Belichick.
There are obviously other examples, and teams then install what's the hot system, and they don't have the players or the coaching to be able to run it particularly well. So that's one thing. So everything gets found out. I think Lamar's offense will get found out a bit, although Lamar's a special talent in terms of running. Whereas Mahomes' special talent is passing, and it's harder to stop that in the long term. He'll always be a good passer, regardless of what what teams do. You can only stop them in the short term. But recency bias is the kind of thing where Peter King, I brought it up last week because Peter King had said it's always smart to pay attention to recency bias. The 49ers could run the table. And my immediate reaction was, what's he going to say next week when Baltimore beats them? Because I was convinced Baltimore would win that game. Is he going to say recency bias is complete bull? And then next week when, say recency bias is okay again. And that's the problem with recency bias.
Yeah.
And anyone who's betting seriously knows that, or else why would someone say X team is 10-6 against the spread this season?
Yeah, that's
Are you going with recency bias? Oh, they didn't last week. Well, they're 10-6 against it. And in my mind, you simply have to balance these things out, and you have to look at a game performance closely to understand. Many routes are the results of one or two big plays that are preventable by the next team, or that are luck because somebody fumbles and it pops right into the hands of someone on the other team. So you have to take that with a huge grain of salt and remember that, if Houston has lost eight games in a row to New England, those were eight different teams that played. They're not the two teams there. So Bill Belichick knows what Bill O'Brien thinks, and he's always a step ahead of him, and he's got better teams, better organized. That's perfectly valid, but you can't, it's like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern tossing the coin, because it's come up tails eight times in a row doesn't mean it's going to come up tails the next time. And just because it came up tails one time doesn't mean it's going to be tails the next time.
Don't subscribe to the tails never fails at all there. Recency bias is an interesting one. We're talking about betting markets. So the NFL, believe it or not, listeners might be surprised, it is to a degree a what have you done for me lately type of betting environment. So like you would have seen, the Dolphins came out with the whole Ferrari in week one, got absolutely beaten off the gridiron, and then the next week they were trending towards the biggest underdog handicap ever for the NFL. So the betting public do, and even more recently there, the Bears in Detroit last week in a dome, just because the offenses had been spluttering, I guess the QBs, one of the lowest totals I've ever seen inside a dome. And yes, it went over, but it didn't go over with fireworks or anything.
Absolutely. I suppose when you're considering these things, particularly from the perspective that we are, from a betting perspective, that is, you throw the best part of recency bias into a pot, you throw form in there, you throw your hunches, your intuitions and things like this, and then you mix that all together into a big broth that eventually hopefully comes up with an informed opinion on something. I guess that's what we're trying to do here, right?
Yeah, and as well as that, it's a supply and demand market. So if at Betfair we're seeing people over-indexing on, let's say, the Cowboys versus the Bears in the Thursday night game, we are going to move the line toward, and traditionally the Cowboys are that kind of team. They're a public team. People love them, people hate them. They're the kind of Marmite of the NFL.
There you go.
America's team.
America's team. That's as good a segue as we can put together.
If I can just interrupt your segue,
please.
Just for a second, I do always have the feeling that the opening lines are kind of what the bookies believe, and the late lines are the result of the people who bet at the last minute. There are valid reasons for waiting, and especially when you've got injury concerns or something like that. But most of the casual money tends to come in late. So when you see these late moves, you often should be thinking, well, the guys had it right originally, and because your job, obviously setting odds, is to draw people into bet. You want to make it so it's an interesting bet, something where both sides think they can get a payoff.
Absolutely. So like the early lines get dinged around on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
You get more towards a public sentiment line as the game approaches, and as Mike says, the late money are people who are in the moment wanting to get involved in a game hour or two from kickoff.
There is a lot of strategy involved with when you place your bet, because you're basically, as the punter, you're looking for the best number possible, and if you think you're going to get the best number possible on a Tuesday before a Sunday game, that's when you take it. Or if you think things are going to change on the Friday and the Saturday, that.
Absolutely, and you're looking for key numbers like the +7.5 or the +3.5, rather than getting the 3, rather than getting the 7.
Going up and down. And as well as that, just looking at the, Mike kind of pointed out to this as well, but just looking at the player availability, because they will be releasing the training information as the course of the week. So if
absolutely,
if a big player
yeah.
is gone, that's going to change things massively.
Player news is huge. Obviously, the quarterback is the fulcrum that everything revolves around. Probably running back is the next most important position. And then once you get out to the wideouts, you'd like to think anybody in the lineup can catch a ball. Maybe some do it a little bit better than others.
But I'd always be looking at the offensive line. If you're dropping some of those guys, it's going to change the game massively, massively. Anyway, we could talk about that all day. We should move on to this weekend's games. So the Sky game on Sunday is a bit tasty, Joe, isn't it? That's the 49ers and the Saints.
Yeah, the 49ers and Saints, we've kind of touched on these already. So both 10-2. Right now, we've got the New Orleans Saints -3, and the over-under has been coming down towards the kind of 44 mark. So open slightly higher. Could see it being a tight enough game, you'd imagine.
Mike, how do you feel about that one?
I like the 49ers getting points. And it's interesting because they went from Baltimore down to Florida, and they've been training in Florida. And then they'll go into New Orleans, presumably on Saturday, and play on Sunday, which is probably better for them in terms of physicality than, jet lag and all that kind of stuff, than going back to San Francisco and then flying back to New Orleans. So I kind of like the 49ers to surprise people here. I'd probably take the points with them. The over under 44.5, to me, I would probably go over on that one.
This is a really good game from a key number perspective. So we've been flip-flopping between +3, this 49ers, and +2.5 on the Betfair Sportsbook. So that's obviously everybody knows that's a key number.
Yeah.
I 4-6 on the money line for New Orleans. Their favorites, justifiably, I guess, with a home field advantage.
Sure.
6-5, the 49ers. You're saying on a neutral field that it's close enough to pick them. Maybe even the 49ers might be the slightly better team.
In terms of form, I think that would be. Sorry, Mike, go ahead.
I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but, it used to be that you automatically sort of gave the home team 3 points. And I think we talked about it maybe 3 weeks ago.
We did, yes.
There's a few home fields where that's still in play, or you might even give a little more. But my general impression this year, and I haven't gone back and just charted it, is that the home field advantage to me seems less than it has been in the past. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason. And I think part of the reason might be the intensity of official replay now, which, part of your home field advantage was that the referees react to the noise of the crowd. That may be dissipating a bit, but it used to be that, I would always figure if I had the teams more or less at a pick 'em level, I would always take the home team. And now I actually try to think about it for another level. I don't know what the next level is. That's the problem.
Looking forward to seeing how Peyton uses Hill in that one as well, given he's playing every offensive position available to man.
Yeah, exactly. He'll be the punter next or something. Who knows with that guy? The jack of all trades, that fellow.
I'm a big
Taysom Hill fan, I must say. I just enjoy seeing that guy in the field because, like Joe says, you never really know what's going to happen or even generally what position he's going to play. Is he going to just run it up the gut? Is he going to be receiver? Is he going to throw the ball? Who knows? But I guess we'll find out. Next game we're going to look at, Joe, would you provide us with some facts and figures, please, for the Buffalo and Baltimore game?
Buffalo and Baltimore. Let me just pull those up here. So we have got Ravens favored on the road here. So 2-5 on the money line with Betfair Sportsbook. The Buffalo Bills 2-1. If you want to see them repeat their victory, I'm not sure impressive or not over the Cowboys.
It's still a victory.
Yeah. Win at all costs. So that makes the Bills 5.5-point underdogs at home. I love a home underdog myself. Mm-hmm. And the total's at 44.5 there.
44.5. My hunch would be under for that one. Mike, how do you feel about this game?
Yeah, the under is probably a good bet. Buffalo's defense played really well against Dallas.
That's why that's kind of informing my opinion on this one.
Yeah, and you know, if Sean McDermott is one of the better defensive coordinators. I mean, he's not technically, but that's what he was when he was in Carolina. And I think if any team's got a shot at kind of slowing the Ravens down a bit, it's Buffalo. The problem, of course, is that Buffalo's offense is going to run into a really good secondary in Baltimore's, and that could well be a problem for Josh Allen. But you know, it's interesting to think that Allen. They can run Allen as well if they really want to. So you could see this game decided by which of the two quarterbacks does the better job running.
Yeah, and interestingly enough there, the total opened at 43 and has been trending upwards. So is it going to keep going? Who knows? This might be the time to get on the under.
I suppose it all comes down. I mean, if that
as the weather in Buffalo, do we know? I haven't taken a look at that.
Upstate New York, generally
cold this time of year.
It would definitely be cold. I don't know if we're going to... By the way, Mike, just a quick aside there. We had our beloved snow game last weekend. Did you enjoy that?
I loved it. I mean, at one point, the pictures with the Giants in those blue uniforms and the Packers in their traditional ones and the snow on the ground, it just... I said, those colors, it's so great. They ought to show this game in black and white.
Few too many points for me in a snow game, though. You know, you want to see 6-3 or 3-0. That's a proper snow game.
That was.
There was a funny moment. I was watching one of these NFL 100-year team games, and it was the running backs, and they had Jim Brown on, and they were showing some tape of him running, and the first thing Chris Collinsworth said was, what jumps out at me when I watch the tape is how crappy those fields were you were playing on. It's like 100 yards of mud. And they were doing this every week, you know.
And Jim Brown was averaging like 150 yards a game on these fields.
Something
like that anyway, yeah. Just one final thing that I was going to say about the Baltimore game. I think... Sorry, Joe, you said 43, was it? 43 and a half?
Open at 43 and it's been trending upward to 44.
44. Yeah. I think if it exceeds that number, that means that Baltimore will have won and kind of won quite handsomely, I assume. But I'd still be confident picking the under on that one myself. Okay. Now, the next game, we better push ahead pretty quick because we don't have much time left on the show. But the Sky game at 9:25 is a pretty tasty one in the AFC, the Chiefs at the Patriots. We kind of talked about the Patriots last week and we've talked about their defense. We've talked about potentially struggling in their offense, although that's everyone will have a different take on this. But two of the biggest teams in the AFC, Mike, Chiefs at the Patriots. How do you see this one going down?
You always hate to bet against Bill Belichick coming off a loss. And especially at home. And again, what Joe said, you know, it's a 3-point spread. So basically they're saying pick them because the Patriots are definitely worth 3 points at home. They haven't lost at home yet this season. Yeah. Kansas City have a more limited offense than they've shown, mostly due to injury. Their defense has played better the last couple of weeks, which has been a big step up, and they found a pass rush, which is one of the Patriots' weaknesses. So I have the feeling that New England pull this off at home, and I'll certainly pick them straight up. Your other question is who's going to be kicking field goals for the Patriots?
Yes,
because that's always up in the air. I also have the feeling that under is a sneaky good bet here.
Yeah, so looking at it here, Mike, so obviously a repeat of the AFC Championship game. And as you said, Chiefs offense finally fully healthy, one would suggest. Mahomes, Kelsey, Hill back. So right now on the Betfair Sportsbook, 7-5 Kansas City on the money line, 4-7 New England. Another one that kind of falls around that key number. So we've been seesawing between the -3 New England and it's sitting on a flat 3 right now. On the total, opened up at 49.5 and now is trending downwards to 48.5. Another one that people would want to be checking the weather closer to time as well, because if you do get something blowing in, this is the kind of game that's going to be affected by that.
Absolutely. If it were were to that, I agree with that that point, and for that reason, really, I'd start my thoughts on this at the under, but then I'd monitor things as the week goes on. Mike, do you have any particular feelings other than the ones you've expressed so far on this game?
No, I mean, three is to tempt you for the Chiefs, and I think if it's under three, I wouldn't. If it's over three, if it's three and a half, I think that's not an unreasonable bet. But like I said, I just think it's not going to be as high scoring as people think. I'd agree. Take a look at the weather because that can affect things. Although, you know, the strange thing was as we saw in Baltimore with the horrible weather there. I thought that would favor Baltimore. It actually didn't, because it made the surface slippery, and Lamar Jackson slipped a number of times when he was trying to do his you know, fancy Dan runs. It's the power sort of game that it favors more than anything else. If you can just play straight ahead, and of course we've seen that Brady isn't normally bothered by bad conditions on the ball and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. We have to wrap it up very, very swiftly, but one final game that we will talk about briefly, Joe, if you wouldn't mind pulling up some numbers on the Los Angeles Rams and the Seahawks game.
Yeah, look, really interesting game here.
That's Monday Night Football, by the way, I should say.
That is Sunday Night Football. Is it Sunday Night Football?
Well, it's Monday, and after midnight.
Yeah. Nocturnal people here. This is Pick'em, so this is 10 to 11 both sides.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. What's interesting about the Seahawks, I think they've only lost to very, very good teams this year. So I don't know if the Rams are a very, very good team. Mike?
Yeah, this is the Rams' season, though. Basically, you know, they win this game, and they're in. They're definitely in the hunt. The one positive, I think, for the Rams was Todd Gurley looked a little bit more like Todd Gurley against Arizona.
Yeah.
But they really do have to work. I mean, it wasn't a bad game for Jared Goff, but he was looking for Robert Woods, and they still didn't manage to get, you know, a whole lot out of Brandon Cooks, or I guess Kupp had a decent game, but you know, I just see Seattle at this point not being affected on the road against the Rams in the Coliseum, but you know, they're not the ones with their backs to the wall.
Yeah, interestingly, they're talking about backs to the wall. So the Rams would have opened up initially as 1.5, 2-point underdogs, and the money has been trending towards those, and that generally is manifests around a team that needs to win, and mm-hmm. public money, public sentiment likes that type of setup.
Oh, that's another interesting element to it. Yeah, that's a good game. Mike, if you had to make a same game multi on this game, what would you be considering?
Same game multi on
The Rams
on this one?
Yeah, the Rams and the Seahawks.
Oh,
putting you on the spot. I apologize.
I'd actually like to go into some of the individual. This is where recency bias is really big. some of the, you know, I would be looking at individual player stats, and I'd probably be, you know, looking at Gurley getting 95 yards last week, and maybe being up to, you know, 70 or 75 on the betting lines, and going under on that, and ditto with Robert Woods. And I did get hosed last week on Russell Wilson, who only had like 24 yards rushing. Because he wasn't that bothered in the pocket. And I think the over-under on it was only like 38 or something. Oh. And I thought over for sure. Yeah. Over for sure. That's always one I look at right away.
I'm a negative kind of person, but I like the unders here. So right now you can have a spread, total, double, 2-1, the Rams +1.5 and under 48.5 at home. So okay. I like them to keep it tight and maybe get the W. And they don't even need to get the W when you're getting 1.5 points at home as well.
That's a good point. So that's, there we go. So that's some stuff to digest ahead of this weekend's fixtures. We better call it a close there. We're running nearly 50 minutes on the show at the moment. But gentlemen, thank you so much both for joining me here today. Joe in the studio, it was nice for you to make your debut on this season of NFL Only Better. Great
thank
to have you,
you
here.
Thank you. Yeah, if Kieran doesn't step back up to the mark, you know where I am.
Yeah, do we really even need that guy anymore? I don't think anybody misses him here. Mike, thanks again for calling in to the show. Your analysis was fantastic as per always. And
thank you. We'll see. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see on Tuesday how good it was.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. This is to be determined. Just a quick plug for the other shows here. Please don't forget to subscribe to the various podcasts and social media platforms. We do Cricket Only Better on Tuesdays. NFL Only Better, which you're listening to at the moment, goes out on Wednesdays, of course. Football Only Better will go out on Thursday, and we'll have Racing Only Better on Friday. And I believe there is a new one, Joe. There's a politics, a UK politics.
A brief new one, yes. So Politics Only Better is available as of yesterday. We're a week out from the first UK general election in 100 years. So if you want to hear my thoughts on that, and you can have a download of Politics Only Better.
That's,
yes.
I will wait.
We're going to spare people it every week. So
I think
for 2 weeks only.
Don't the Conservatives get the 3-point home advantage?
It's a slightly bigger advantage right now, Mike. I think last poll, they're about 6-7%, something like that.
Yeah. So that's another interesting line to keep on there. We'll see if Boris Johnson maintains his fitness and whether or not what his arm is looking like going into next week.
He'd make a good offensive lineman, maybe.
We'll see that. But anyway, gentlemen, thank you so much as well. I do, as always, please remind you to gamble responsibly at all times. And we will see you here next week on NFL Only Better.